Hello?
Hello, Michael.
Yes.
Welcome to Stir the Pots.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. As always, I always ask my guest, how did you start the career of the culinary world?
I honestly just sort of fell into it. It's a very long story. I'll keep it brief, but basically I was actually going to art school, to college. Felt that I needed a break, traveled around the country for several months, and when I got back home, which was Detroit, Michigan at the time, I kind of needed a job, and I had a roommate whose brother owned a small bakery, and I figured, well, that's something I can do. And within a few months, I'd pretty much caught in the bug, and I guess now I can't really imagine doing anything else.
And you initially started out baking bread, right?
Yeah, I mean, this little place was kind of it was a bakery, but we also did food to go, and we did catering. So it was I kind of got a taste of a lot of different things, both sweet and savory, and cakes and all that stuff. But what really, really turned me on at the time was working with bread.
And was that primarily like a straight dough bread, or was it also sourdough bread?
At that particular place, we didn't really get into a lot of intense starters and things, but of course that's where I did learn about them. And what was great about that job was is I got so into it that after a few more months, I basically kind of created like the night baker's position, and basically I would spend all day pouring through books, and then all night just experimenting. Basically, the deal was as long as I, filled the cases by, 7 a.m., I was pretty much given carte blanche to do whatever I wanted to do. So I learned a lot at that in that period.
And what's it like working in probably one of the most premier restaurants in the United States, in comparison to where you were in Michigan?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been an uphill thing the whole way. I always say that I'm still pretty much living out my dream, and I'm at the goal that I'd kind of looked toward for many years. So really, I mean, this is where I've kind of always wanted to be. So I don't take it for granted. I still kind of pinch myself every day to remind myself that
You
I'm in a
made
pretty
it.
good spot. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
What's like the process of coordinating a dessert with a chef's menu? Is there something you have to both see, or is it totally a separate entity?
Oh no, I think it's definitely, I mean, the pastry program is definitely part of the overall vision of the restaurant, which is usually the overall vision of the chef. I occasionally hear stories of pastry chefs and their executive chefs who kind of clash and don't get along, and that is just a kind of a foreign concept to me, because I've always had really good relationships and rapports with the chefs that I've worked with, and I think it's vital. As a pastry chef, you have to know what's going on the other side of the kitchen, and in turn, wherever I've worked, we've always had the cooks coming over to see what we're doing, and we're making sure not only that we're working with the under the same vision and style, but we're also trading techniques along the way as well.
Right. Well, I had started out in the industry. Basically, I went to the army and I learned to cook there. And then when I got out, I decided, well, I'm going to go to work in a French restaurant. And I started really from the bottom up as a breakfast cook, and then decided, I should learn more. And I went into pastry, and then I went back into the kitchen. Do you think it's important for chefs or pastry chefs to also know the savory side of the business?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, I mean, like you said, I think that cross training, no matter where you eventually end up, is really important, because I think generally speaking, okay, your average line cook probably has to work with a little bit more spontaneity, and your average pastry cook has to be more precise and measured. And I think that there's definitely room on the hotline for a little bit more precision, and I think there's definitely room in the pastry side for a little bit more spontaneity. And I'd like to think that I kind of bring both to the table because I've had that sort of experience. And just even beyond, technical skills, it's also about, having a sense of urgency, just finesse, overall finesse, and a sense of urgency at the same time. And I think you tend to learn the finesse in pastry, and you learn the sense of urgency in savory cooking. I kind of think that's how it usually works out. So if you have experience in both, I think you'd start to become a little bit more well-rounded.
And you're not a school-trained chef. You worked pretty much through restaurants. My brother had the same experience, and I started out not going to school, and then later on going into school because my wife told me I was a lousy cook. How do you think school chefs differ from unschooled? I mean, I think you're still getting training, aren't you, by working in a restaurant?
I mean, I actually, in my opinion, it always depends on the individual. I didn't go to school mostly because I just couldn't really afford it at the time, and I kind of took the earn while you learn approach. And but I see culinary school students and graduates, almost on a daily basis, and doesn't matter where they come from. It's really all about the individual. It's about what they take out of the experience. And if, and I never use the word self-taught, in my case, but I guess I would use the word self-directed. I mean, I was passionate enough and disciplined enough that I made sure I was always learning something. So whether you're in a school environment or just in a work environment, that's really what it's about, is taking as much as you can per situation.
A chef once told me, steal with your eyes and your ears.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I say the same thing.
How can you describe your style of pastry or desserts?
I don't know. I mean, it's definitely evolved over the years. On the one hand, I'm dealing with classical flavor combinations, and then sometimes giving them kind of contemporary twists using, new techniques, or I'm taking these classic techniques and plugging in, maybe slightly unconventional flavor combinations. It's, yeah, I don't know. I like to be pigeonholed too much, and I think we're certainly at a time where cooking and cuisine in general are—I mean, things are just exploding. And I think a lot of the typical descriptors we would use to describe cooking are kind of almost becoming obsolete because things are so, the influences are coming from so many different directions, and I tend to see it as either just it's good or it's not so good.
Well, I was fortunate to travel to Istanbul recently and cook there, and I mean the variety of palate flavors and just things that I can't do over here because of the products or maybe just the kind of clientele I have. It was just like free rein, and the person I was with just said, "Do whatever you want and make this place magic." And it was like, wow, and it was like the ingredients spoke to me. Do you find the same thing when you travel to different countries, or is it hard to use ingredients from a different place when you're somewhere else and you're not used to what they're using?
Sure. I mean, there is a reason why things kind of keep their sense of place because, I love Japanese food, and I love, aesthetic and all of that, and having been to Japan and seeing a lot of, the European influenced stuff and as well as the traditional Japanese stuff, I kind of get why, sweetened red beans don't really go over well in America. And it's a textural thing, and there are certain, when you really investigate the differences between, I guess what we would call American cuisine and Japanese cuisine, is there are definitely a lot more, I guess pasty, gummy textures in Japanese cuisine that just are foreign to us here. So yeah, some of those things don't translate. But yeah, I mean, again, it's all about being receptive to those new things. I mean, I was just in Thailand last month, and there, when you walk out into the streets, you're just bombarded by food everywhere you go. And if you're receptive to it, I'm still kind of testing everything that I saw and tasted there. How exactly it'll show up in a mix here, it's hard to say. I mean, it might take another couple months, and it's hard. I mean, I certainly don't think you can instantly understand, a cuisine after a 2 week trip. But definitely, yeah, the influence is definitely in there somewhere.
Well, I travel to Europe because my sister lives in Switzerland, and I love going to France because my mother's French. And I went to Paris, and I saw this thread where you're talking about the different pastry shops, and you seem to be a big fan of Pierre Hermé and some of the places I visited just by chance. Because when you walk in Paris, you can walk into virtually any pastry shop. Why do you think New York, in particular, since we're such a food capital, we don't have those sort of pastry shops? Is it a cost thing, or?
I don't know. I mean, in a way we do. I mean, we have all the little, hot and crusty places, and every neighborhood seems to have, a couple of, pain quotidien. Are they at the same level? I don't know. I'm sure there are bad bakeries in Paris too. I guess there's just not something that's in our culture. I mean, I think in kind of American culture as it is, I think a lot of baking was done in the home, and maybe not as much as in Europe. I'm guessing that might be a guess, but yeah, it's definitely something I've noticed, something I've kind of wished we had more of. I mean, there's some Sunday mornings, all I want is a really good croissant, and it's actually really hard to find one.
Yeah, unless you're making it yourself at home.
Well, yeah, but I'm not going to make croissants at home.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
Well, I'm a home baker, so I do weird things. I woke up this morning at 5 with a cat, and I made some German bread. So that's one thing that's lacking here too, is good German style bread. So I'm
sure.
trying to learn how to make that myself. What do you think the reason is for the savory inspired pastry chefs opening restaurants, or do you think that's always been part of the pastry repertoire, sweet and savory?
I don't know. I mean, there are definitely really deep historical references for certain combinations of ingredients. Things are always cyclical. There's a great book. I haven't actually picked it up in a while, but by Raymond Sokolov, and I believe the title is "Why We Eat What We Eat." And in this book, he kind of gives examples of, examples of fusion that date back 500 or more years. The initial, fusion cuisine really, really hit, after all of the exploration in the 14 and 1500s, because there were all these ingredients coming from South America into Europe. And I often use the example of chocolate and corn. Now that might seem kind of edgy and avant-garde, but if you look back thousands of years, where did chocolate come from and where did corn come from? And you realize they were often used together. In terms of, in modern day situations, I think it's just a natural evolution. I think we've kind of gotten over, I think, the worst of it, because I think there are a lot of situations where you're being beat over the head, perhaps with beats. And no, I think people are learning to use it in subtle ways. In terms of pastry chefs, kind of stepping out on their own, I think that's kind of almost a separate, whether the style is, savory desserts, which is, there are examples of that. I think there's just more of, pastry chefs kind of the slow creep out of the shadows of, the more famous, savory chefs. And I think it's definitely been a slow evolution over the last, I don't know, 15 years, where you can actually go into a restaurant and you know who the pastry chef is. There are some places in France, even, you still don't know who the pastry chef is, just because that's the way it's been set up. So yeah, I think it's a lot of just pastry chefs getting a little bit more recognition.
One of my guests, Dieter Schorner, who's a really wonderful guy and extremely well trained and just wonderful gentleman, said that sometimes he has a problem of trying to teach base pastry to students because there's like so, oh, well, you could put lemongrass in this. And he goes, sometimes it's just confusion, not fusion. Do
Yeah, I
you agree
mean,
with that?
I've certainly run into my own examples of that, of people who, they're so into it they just want to learn to run before they walk. They might know the gelling temperature of, methyl cellulose, but they'd be hard pressed to make puff pastry or an omelet. So I think. I think a good base of base knowledge of those basics is vital. And it's not really till you know those that you can start to mess with them.
And those things like methyl cellular and hydrocolloids. I took a class once with Alex Talbot, and it's interesting, but how practical is it in a kitchen environment, in a real kitchen, and rather than like a laboratory, say?
I mean, they certainly can be very practical. I mean, and actually, Alex himself, I mean, he comes from a restaurant background. So really, when he's thinking and he's working with these things, he still thinks as a line cook, like, how can he use these ingredients to make things better, more efficient, easier to produce. But in general, yeah, for me, A, it has to fit into the style of cooking that we're doing, like I mentioned before. La Bernadette is not an avant-garde restaurant, so I have to keep that in mind, so I'll plug those things in where it's appropriate. And there are also some techniques, as you mentioned, that might not be practical for a restaurant kitchen, especially one of the volume that we're doing. So I tread lightly. I keep up with what's going on as much as I can, and the amount of information that's being circulated is just exponential. Yeah, I keep an open mind, but I try to remain sober at the same time.
And where does your inspiration come from?
Everywhere, really. I was actually just joking with one of my assistants the other day that I don't read books much anymore. And I have a pretty impressive cookbook collection, but I don't really acquire all the newest, latest books. And in a way, partly it's because of time, and it's quite expensive. But I almost don't want to be influenced too much by things that other people are doing. It might sound strange, but for instance, all of the El Bulli books, all the retrospectives that came out over the last few years, I have never really sat down and spent much time with those, just because, I fear that if I really immerse myself in those books, that I'm subconsciously going to start making El Bulli style food. But certainly, I look at books and I look at magazines, and there are a handful of blogs that I look at regularly. For me, really, I think an important part of my evolution, and I think of where cooking is going, both in restaurants and at home with home cooks, is it's really the internet. I mean, think of the last 10 years. I mean, there was Chowhound and eGullet, 8 years ago, and that was it. And now there are hundreds and hundreds of blogs, and they're not all great, and they're some are kind of sloppy, but there's so much out there that you can just spend hours seeing new things, and it's pretty inspiring.
I'm a bread forum maniac. I go to all bread forums, whatever language and world I go to, and say, okay, how can I turn this into a sourdough version of this, but I do also have a book collection. I'm bad. I try to limit myself, and I buy stuff from Europe, and it's like way too expensive, and I don't look at them often. I just have them on the shelves. They're kind of more decorations too.
Sure, and I mean, I keep all these books for reference, and but still, I mean, the easiest reference is, oh, let me Google that. And granted, there's a lot of static, there's a lot of stuff that isn't useful out there. So sometimes you have to sift quite a while to find what you need. But I mean, just the instant access, and also the fact that you're more connected with people, has really sped things up. I think that's been a main thing, that's kind of driven, sort of this fast sort of constant change, and that change is both good and bad. Kind of bugs me sometimes when I read that, this or that technique is suddenly passe, because people have been doing it for 6 months. It's kind of ridiculous, but I think all in all, it's a positive thing.
Was it a good thing to resurrect retro desserts or even things that the restaurant's done in the past when you weren't even there and just make it your own or change it a little
Sure,
bit?
absolutely. I mean, I think, I mean, there's nothing new. I mean, ultimately, everything's kind of been done, so we're always just kind of playing around with the classics, and some of us are just digging deeper to find something that just might not be classic to us. I think as long as, whatever you're doing, you're kind of putting it through your own filter and making it your own somehow, is really what's important. I mean, I kind of recently I started to bring back the Molten Center chocolate cake, just because, it almost seems like it could be retro already. Because everybody was doing it, and then everybody stopped doing it. So I think now it's okay.
Well, I remember when my chef who I was working with came back to the restaurant from France and he goes, "Guys, I have a new dessert. It's a beautiful cake." And we're like, "Wow." And he gave us the recipes and we were making it. We're like, "Wow, this is amazing. Chef is so smart." And then I picked up Michel Bras' book and looked inside and said, "Hey, that's the same cake." So we're like,
Sure.
"Oh, okay." But it
And
worked.
I think there are like four or five people who are taking credit for that at this point. But I mean, it's funny. I mean, again, as long as you approach everything new with that kind of intensity, it's only a good thing.
What is it like working with Eric Repair?
Like I said, I've always had great relationships with all the chefs I've worked for, and I've always taken something different. Looking back, I've taken different aspects from different chefs, and I guess the one thing that I get most from working with Eric is that being a good chef is more than just being a good cook, and that encompasses management. It encompasses all of the stuff that happens outside the kitchen, and even though he's not literally standing at the pass every service and wiping the rim of every single plate that leaves the kitchen, he's definitely the big picture guy. And I always say that of all the chefs that sort of at his level, he's probably the one who's in his kitchen the most. So he's a constant presence, and he's a constant, source for ideas, but he's also very open to hearing our ideas. As a team, we have half a dozen sous chefs and a chef de cuisine and myself, and we have people who work, you know, sort of in the consulting arm and research and development for the restaurant. And kind of as a team, it's, I almost think of it as a think tank, and he's simply sort of the one who drives that think tank. So there's always something new going on. There's never a dull moment. We're always talking about things. So that's one of the most exciting things about working with him, is that he's constantly thinking, and he's one of the smartest people I've met, actually.
What, since it's fall now, what is your favorite medium of preparing desserts? I mean, what is your favorite thing you like to make now? Chocolate, fruits, nuts? What is your seasonal item now that's on your mind currently?
Yeah, you know, I just kind of let them roll in. I'm always excited at a change, because usually you're kind of sick of whatever you have available, and to me, kind of summer into fall is the most dramatic shift. Going from winter to spring, you kind of go from nothing to something, but summer to fall, it's you know, you're working with berries, and then all of a sudden you start getting Concord grapes and apples and quince, and I love all that stuff, and chestnuts. And so I use as much as I can of everything. I try to start thinking about it ahead of time, but I don't always get a chance to get things the minute they come out, but we eventually do. And right now we're working with pomegranates, and figs are still going strong. We're working on stuff with quince. Chestnuts will probably be on the menu by Thanksgiving. I run.
How does the current economic crisis affect high-end restaurants, or do you think, or will it affect it and change the way people are cooking?
It's hard to say. I mean, definitely, I think New York is probably always going to be an exception to the rest of the country, just because of the concentration and the fact that people eat out a lot more. And generally speaking, I think people have more income to throw around. I mean, that said, having such a high concentration of restaurants, I think time will tell. I think, there might be a thinning of the herd. I kind of feel lucky that we're somewhat isolated. We're a restaurant that's been around for over 20 years, and we're kind of, we have a fair amount of accolades to go along with that. So I think part of it is, if somebody's going to go out to eat, they're going to go to that tried and true place, even if they spend a little bit more money than going to the latest hit trendy place that opened. And also, I mean, we actually were conscious of all this happening, even as early as the spring of this year. We knew things were going to get tighter, so we definitely made a plan to not only just be conscious of our costs, also just to invest back into the restaurant to make sure that we are providing value and quality, and really just positioning ourselves to kind of weather out the storm.
If you weren't a pastry chef, what do you think you'd be doing now?
I have absolutely no idea. Like I said, I was going to art school, and at the time, what interested me a lot was photography. And I often say that, of anything out there, pastry and photography might kind of mirror themselves, because they're both highly technical, yet whatever is within the frame or on the plate is, I guess, the art. So to me, it's, they're both kind of a good blend of science and art. So I guess that's one reason why I was drawn to pastry as opposed to savory cooking, again, is because there is that more of that precision, which, in photography, at least back when I started, pre-digital, you had to know what you're doing, and you had to work cleanly and precisely. But yeah, and in general, I have absolutely no idea what I would be doing.
And what do you think your next venture will be once you tire either of restaurants or decide, well, that's it, I'm done New York?
Well, I'm only 35. I wish I could retire,
Oh.
but no, I don't know. Like I said, I'm still kind of living out that goal,
Okay.
and I haven't. I mean, there are definitely more and more possibilities open to chefs, and especially to pastry chefs. You know, more and more things have opened up in the last, 10 years or so. I'm not sure. I'm not necessarily ready to jump into ownership. I like getting a paycheck, and I also have a fair amount of autonomy with what I do, which is probably another reason why I gravitate towards pastry, because I'm a self-starter. So I feel I have the best of both worlds, and yeah, that's kind of a to be determined thing. But right. I'm happy, and I'm thinking about it though.
And will you write a book?
We're actually just coming out with a new book. It should be on the shelves November 10th, I believe. When I started the blog that I'm doing back in January, and doing that, and I recently started a regular series for the online version of Gourmet magazine. And in that process, I've come to realize that I really enjoy writing. So while there are no specific deals on the table, I guess all I could say was, if I were to do a book, it would probably be something that you probably haven't seen. It wouldn't be your typical cookbook. Whereas, it would be as much about the writing as it would be about the recipes. I guess that's all I'll say on that.
Oh, okay. So we're all gonna scratch our heads and wait. Do you still bake bread?
That's the one thing that we don't do ourselves at La Bernardin, and I do miss it sometimes. But for us to do it at the restaurant would require, more staff, more equipment. I
Space.
only have one small convection oven, so we're really not set up to do it. So I miss it occasionally. Sometimes even just making burritos kind of takes me back. But yeah, I don't, and I have kind of your standard New York apartment kitchen, which isn't really conducive to full scale baking, outside of the random pizza dough. Yeah, I kind of miss bread.
Yeah, well, don't tell me that, 'cause I got sourdoughs all over my fridge and bread in my oven
Oh,
all
believe me,
the time.
I cook probably at least 5 nights a week. So I get use out of my kitchen, but yeah, I rarely do desserts or pastry at home. And maybe it's just because I don't have all my toys. But
Do you really eat pastries though, or can you still enjoy it while working in a pastry environment?
oh, sure. I mean, yeah. I mean, I might not eat as much. I mean, everybody's got a sweet tooth, I think, to some degree. When I do get a chance to eat out, I think it's very important to, whether you want it or not, just out of obligation, just to see what other people are doing, and to taste what other people are doing, just to kind of put what you do in context.
Do you have a favorite pastry shop in the city that you go to, or do you like, what's your like favorite pastry?
I don't know. I don't know that I have a favorite necessarily. I mean, pastry shops, there's not much in my neighborhood. I mean, probably the best pastry shop in my general neighborhood would be Paillard. But in terms of restaurant pastry chefs, I mean, of course, you've got your tier of guys like Sebastian at Per Se, and Johnny at Jean George, and Dominique at Danielle, and I mean, this is probably the highest concentration of talented pastry chefs probably on the planet. So I do try to taste as much of their creations as possible.
Do you think New York's the hotbed of pastries, or do you think it's still France, or who's the hotbed?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I think things have gotten so globalized. I mean, what you could say that, you know, if you close your eyes and you ate a meal in a 3-star restaurant, you know, you wouldn't necessarily know whether you were in Paris or Tokyo or New York or London. You know, there is something that I think there is sort of a, in a good way, a homogenization. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe Spain is still the hotbed for everything. I mean, that's where, you know, the most innovative chefs still seem to be coming from. But I mean, there are pockets all over the world, I think. I think there's just such a high concentration here, and that concentration definitely drives. I mean, it's a community. It's a friendly competition, if you'd call it a competition at all. But just that close proximity definitely drives the quality and the creativity, I think.
Well, thank you, and I don't want to run your voice down because you have a cold, so
I appreciate that.
yeah. Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And
All right.
okay, take care.
You too, bye.
Bye.